The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Fowman, and joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. We're going to hop into some WWE discussion, a little bit off topic from what we normally go through. We'll go through a retirement there. An Alabama coaching staff change for basketball has been made, and then we'll have to recap what's happened in the past week from the NBA regarding free agency. So, Nathan, I hate to start off the show with this sad note here, but WWE superstar John Cena announces he's retiring from competing in WWE events at the end of 2025, ending a 20-year career in the sport. Just what are your thoughts on losing such a legend in John Cena, and I'm assuming your favorite wrestler of all time?
Oh, yeah, instantly favorite wrestler of all time. I think he's pretty iconic when you think about WWE. Of course, you have some other big guys in there as well. But for me, John Cena always being that one guy, when you think about wrestling, you're just like instantly, oh, John Cena, his iconic jorts, all of that. You can't see me. He just has a very iconic brand, and to see him retire from wrestling, it's kind of a bittersweet moment, because he's had a great career with that, but now he's moved on to some bigger and better things. I really appreciate his acting and what all he's done. So I know there will be other opportunities, but to see him retire from WWE is kind of saddening.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge loss for the sport, because like you said, when you think of WWE, I think John Cena is either the first or second name that comes to mind, the other one being The Rock. And to lose such a legend is kind of sad. But he had been taking a backseat to WWE in favor of acting, so it kind of was expected. There was a lot of rumors that he was probably going to call it a career somewhat in the next year or so, and he does end up calling it a career in 2025. So it is a huge loss for the sport. If you had to pick one of his movies that's your favorite, Nathan, or a TV show, what would be your favorite John Cena role?
I mean, that's just pretty instant. The way he plays Peacemaker, of course, in his own Peacemaker series, or you can get to the second Suicide Squad movie. Either one of those two roles, he's been fantastic in. He has a bunch of other movies that he's great in as well, and in other roles, but those are definitely my favorite. Peacemaker, I don't know if you really classify him as a superhero. He kind of is.
Anti-hero.
Anti-hero. Yeah, but he's definitely my favorite out of most people. And that's crazy, because you think about Marvel versus DC, it's kind of not comparable most, but John Cena just plays that role so well as from an acting standpoint, which is pretty crazy, because you think about the number of professional athletes that try to translate into acting, and it doesn't go so well. LeBron.
are you telling me you didn't like Space Jam New Legacy at all?
Just, you know, go ahead. We can spend another hour talking about how he has tarnished the Space Jam legacy forever. But I don't think we had that kind of time.
Yeah, I really don't think we do either. We'd be on here for a hot minute talking about LeBron ruining that whole franchise. I thought Space Jam was, I mean, it was a favorite sports movie of all time. And then you followed up with that. It's rough. Moving on to Alabama basketball here, Nathan. Nate Oates is hiring Detroit Pistons assistant coach Brian Adams to fill the final assistant spot on the Alabama coaching staff. How important was the addition of Brian Adams to Nate Oates' coaching staff going into the season?
Well, it's huge from a defensive standpoint. You talk about the offensive output that we've seen in the past few years from Nate Oates, and of course, his, I guess you would say, historic offense at this point, the way he likes to run it, very NBA style, three hunting. But the defense was very lackluster last year, and then a few years before that. So I think this was one of the biggest moves to come bring a guy in Brian Adams in to kind of beef up that defensive end. And hopefully, I think with the addition of some of our newer talent, better length, better, more suited to play more aggressive on the defensive end, I think with this bringing in Brian Adams will definitely complement what roster we have currently.
Yeah, he's going to be the defensive specialist for this team. Pannone, the other assistant, being the offensive specialist. And then you have somebody like Preston Murphy on the assistant coaching staff, who is an excellent recruiter, probably one of the best in the country. So Brian Adams fills that role of the defensive mind on this staff that felt like it was lacking that last year. I mean, look at the team, like Nathan mentioned, throughout the early part of that season and into the late part. It was a really rough showing defensively. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of people had Alabama losing in the first round, in the second round, didn't have them going to the Final Four. But when they got to the tournament, the defense flipped the script and played really well. So if Alabama's defense can play like they did in the tournament, maybe even better, this team is going to be destined for great things. And getting Adams on the staff to improve that defense is huge. And I think it raises the ceiling even higher than what it already was for Alabama, because you're going to be having a defensive-minded coach on your staff to boost the defense, which was looking to be one of the weaker spots of this team. So to have the improvement there, it raises the ceiling even more than expectations for fans and people in the sport for this Alabama team to win the championship next year. I've said it before on the show, it's championship or bust for Nate Oates. I'm not talking about SEC, I'm talking about national championship. This roster is that good. So there's a lot of expectations going into the season for Oates in this roster, and I'm hoping this addition, not by itself, can push this team over the top to get to that point and beat somebody like a Kansas or beat UConn, hopefully, because I don't want to see them win a third one,
I don't think
personally.
anyone does. I think it just goes back to consistency on the defensive end. I think you break down last year, you kind of look at the lack of hustle in some points. I think especially in transition defense was one of the bigger things. So improving in those areas going into this season, working harder on the defensive end. You go back to the year before that when Brandon Miller was on the team, and it was a very talented roster, and everyone had us going far in the tournament, and we just get upset by San Diego State in this recent scene. I don't like to highlight that, but you kind of point out where there were flaws defensively, and they were just made up for by talent. I mean, you break down the offense with that year too, but the issues on defense kind of carried over to the next season, and I think it's just more blatant because the offense wasn't as good. It wasn't as talented of a roster, so those areas on defense that need to be improved kind of suck out more. I think going into this year, it's a little bit more easy to identify where we need to improve in the offseason. And I think with Nato's bringing a guy in, Brian Adams in, it is just to help fix those areas. Because I look at the rosters, it's pretty old. Like, it's old, young. You have a lot of new additions. I think the hustle will definitely be there. Guys coming out of high school have a high motor usually. So it's just about being able to hustle around the court, and I think that's the for the most part that's what we lacked last year.
Looking at this addition, Nathan, do you think this makes Alabama's coaching staff the best in the country, or is there somebody like UConn competing with them?
It's definitely up there, but I think you got to look at I think head coach is a big position. Number one, you talk about having a national championship under your belt. That's like the biggest relief there can ever be. So a guy in Dan Hurley, you can say the staff up in UConn is a little bit better, but I think you look at the all around. I mean, it definitely top three in my opinion, especially with what Natus has been able to do. You talk about the trajectory he's on for his head coaching position. If he wins a national championship this coming year or in the next 3 to 5 years, then I think his future at Alabama, I mean, he's pretty set in stone there, but you talk about other coaching jobs too, because I know Alabama's not just like the end all be all. You talk about the NBA, but for the most part, I think Nate's just very happy where he is. But as far as like talent in the country, you coaching staffs, I think you still got to include John Calipari up there, even though he's kind of fallen off a cliff. Tom Izzo with Michigan State, definitely still up there with what he can do. Bill Self, even though they kind of fell apart last year, you got to include what he's been able to do in the offseason with his recruiting and attacking the transfer portal. So there's a ton of good coaches out there. It's just hard to kind of break down which is the best at the top of the sport. Until someone really takes down UConn, I guess you just got to say Dan Hurley.
Yeah, I think that I have to agree with that there. Don't forget about Drew at Baylor too. He's lost a lot of assistants these
That
past
is
couple of
true.
years. When you talk about Jerome Tang at Kansas State, then John Jacuzzi goes to FAU. So he's lost a lot of assistants, but he has the pipeline. He's proved that his assistants are good head coaches in the league. So I mean, you can't ignore what he does at Baylor either. But I think this coaching staff, Nate Oates at the helm, is probably second to Dan Hurley in UConn because, like you mentioned, Nathan, Oates doesn't have the championship yet. Hurley has two back-to-back ones. So you can't really say Oates and his coaching staff are better than Hurley and his because they've proven they're going to win national championships there. Not saying Nate Oates won't, but he hasn't yet.
Yeah.
All right. NBA discussion here, Nathan. Let's start with the Lakers here. The Los Angeles Lakers are hiring former NBA head coaches, Nate McMillan and Scott Brooks, as the top assistants on JJ Redick's coaching staff. We both have experience with Nate McMillan being a former Hawks head coach and Scott Brooks being the former Thunder head coach. So, do you think these two assistant hires are going to be impactful for JJ Redick going forward, or do you think it would have been better trying to get other assistant coaches here?
I think these two hires are more as like a safety net. You talk about JJ Redick in his first year as a head coach, and he's taking over a franchise that has unbelievably high expectations. You talk about LeBron James, you got Bronny there now. They want to win the championship. They want to do something historic. And Lakers fans are always going to be at the edge of their seat. They want something more. They want to be the best all the time. So JJ Redick having those expectations first year, it's a lot to take on. I feel like these two hires kind of help form kind of like a safety net for him, something to fall back on. People with more experience, people who have been around the coaching game a lot longer, of course. And I think people who can give viable opinions and help with the coaching aspect, because if I'm in JJ Redick's shoes and I'm being thrown in first year to the Lakers head coaching position, I'm not going to go in and hire younger assistants to help me out. Even though I think for a franchise that's rebuilding, I think that's the way to go. And honestly, I think if JJ Redick was to be hired somewhere else for a more rebuilding franchise, I feel like that would have been a better start for him. But that's just not the situation he fell into. But for him to ha have this kind of veteran depth in the coaching position, while also, of course, having the veteran LeBron on his team, I think will help him a lot. And I think it'll make it a little bit easier on him, especially through the regular season, going into the postseason, to kind of figure things out. Because, I mean, let's be honest, you got a few more months and then NBA starts back up back in what, October? So he's only got a few more months to prepare, realistically, before he's just thrown to the wolves. And you lose your first few games, and you kind of have that Lakers franchise on you. So hopefully JJ can get it right there in LA.
Yeah, the expectations in LA are extremely high, like you mentioned, Nathan. It is championship or bust every year, regardless of what that roster looks like. I mean, when they had Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, and Julius Randle, when that was sort of their core there, their expectation was we want to at least make the playoffs and probably get to the conference finals. And I felt like at the time that was even unrealistic for them there.
No, no.
I mean, but for Redick to get these two experienced head coaches, McMillan did bring the Hawks to the conference finals back in 2021. I know they haven't got back there since in the year following. He did not really do well, ended up getting fired, but he did get them there through his coaching. And people really credited him with the ability to sort of have that resurgence with the Hawks because before he was promoted from assistant coach, that team looked awful. Back then looks like it does now. So for him to have that experience bringing that roster out of the dumps and getting to the conference finals in the East during a year which looked pretty hard to do that. I think it's good for JJ Redick to have on his roster. And then Scott Brooks coached KD, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden in OKC. He managed, somewhat managed those personalities and that chemistry, got them to an NBA finals. So he has finals experience, which I think is very important for JJ Redick because if he's going to make the NBA finals, which is the expectation, he needs somebody on the coaching staff that's been there before. He doesn't need to go to LeBron asking him stuff like that. Even though he probably will, he needs to have a coaching staff person to talk to about it. And Scott Brooks fills that role perfectly. So I think getting both these guys was important for Redick. He could have gotten any former head coach, but I think these two guys fit what he needs perfectly as McMillan can show him how to navigate expectations as well as Scott Brooks. Scott Brooks can much more show him how to navigate if they get to the finals, how to handle that situation. So each of these guys fills a necessary role for Redick. And I think it was a good get for him and LA. Same with the Lakers here, Nathan. LeBron James re-signs on a 2-year, $101.35 million contract extension to stay with the franchise. This contract is below the max level he was eligible for, and is the first time LeBron has signed a below max level contract since 2010 when he joined the Miami Heat in that faded I'm coming to South Beach thing. So, were you expecting this, Nathan?
Honestly, I was not expecting this. I was expecting LeBron to be kind of selfish. Past few years, he's taken pretty much all of the Lakers cap space with his contracts, and I thought he was just gonna go and do it again. But I will give him credit this time. He stepped back on his contract and he gave up some money to get some cap space for the Lakers so they can go out and get free agents, which Surprisingly, it hasn't happened yet. All the free agents are almost gone, and
I
I'm
wouldn't
sitting
say
here.
surprising. It's the Lakers. They expect they're going to get everything and everyone and never get anything.
Yeah, I mean, we can sit. We'll sit here and cover some of the stuff that happened, but like, for LeBron to be in the situation, I think it really just shows kind of how much time he has left in the league too. With this contract, I mean, 2 year deal. Do you think he comes back? I don't know. I think it's all dependent on if he wins a championship or not. I think he wants to go out on that strong note. Personally, I think he should have went out in 2020 when he won that bubble championship, and he should have said, "I'm done after that."
Well, he had to come back and get the scoring title. That was the big thing I think he wanted to come back for.
Yeah, but if I'm trying to end it off on something, I'm trying to end it off on a championship.
Yeah.
Going back to it, I think. With LeBron taking this and clearing up some cap space with the Lakers, whatever they decide to do with it with the last few months of preparations before the season starts, they need to add role players. They need so many more depth pieces. And the 3-and-D guys has been what's made teams championship level teams. You go back to the bubble and talk about, I don't know, there's a number of veterans on that team that were good in their prime, but going back to where they were in the bubble, they were definitely more of a 3-and-D role type player. And that's what the Lakers need. Especially you can break down, I think Boston has that for the most part. I think there's a little bit more star power in that. And then you can go back to the year before that with the Nuggets and the number of players they had that were defined to the 3-and-D role. If the Lakers can go and get a few guys like that before the season starts, then I like their chances to go and compete more than not. But I look at the current roster right now, how it's constructed. I'll break down the whole Bronny thing a little bit probably, because I think that was just very poor. But like you talk about the West and where the West is currently, the number of teams that can compete, only a certain amount of teams can make it to the playoffs. And if you're not shaping up the roster now to really compete in the long run, then what are you going to do? I don't know if this team is capable of making it to the playoffs. And even if they do, like what seeding are they looking at? How much do they have left in the tank to continue to compete at a championship caliber level? With LeBron's age, with where AD is, with the lack of depth, and I feel like it's just kind of a meshed roster that just doesn't really fit together well chemistry wise. So there's a lot of big questions. But with LeBron taking this contract cut, I think helps a little bit.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Nathan, it does give them roster flexibility when it comes to cap space. They can use a mid-level exception. They can trade their 2031 first round pick if he had signed a max contract, which I believe was $104 million. They wouldn't have had access to that first round pick. They would have lost access to the mid-level exception. So they would have had a lot to deal with, because this roster, like you mentioned as well, is not constructed well at all. You lost Taurean Prince, which I think was one of their better role players last season. Shot really well from three. Was that 3-and-D guy you need on a roster like
Yep.
this? And to lose him is a massive loss. I know it's not, you're not losing Austin Reaves or something like that, which I think would be a catastrophic loss as well,
I
even though he's under
don't know. Maybe
contract.
they should have traded away Austin Reaves.
But to lose somebody like that, it's not a huge thing. It's not going to be the top story for a day. But for the Lakers, it was their top story, is when that news came in that Taurean Prince wasn't going to re-sign. That's a huge loss, because the other guy on this roster, Jared Vanderbilt, who kind of fits that need, is not a great 3-point shooter and was dealing with injuries all last season. So can he get to the Taurean Prince level? I don't know. And the way they navigated this roster last season, they just filled it with a bunch of crap. Gabe Vincent did not play majority last season. Jackson Hayes, non-existent in the playoffs. Spencer Dinwiddie, they picked him up at the deadline on a he got released. They signed him as a free agent. Awful. I mean, there was games where he went 0-4 in the playoffs, like D'Angelo Russell. I can go Cam Reddish. So the depth in this roster is not very good. The Lakers have done, I don't think, anything in free agency outside of drafting.
Nope.
So I mean, it feels like Rob Pelinka is just sitting on his hands in the office. Is he asleep? Like what? Like, does somebody need to go to what is it called now? Crypto Arena and wake Rob Pelinka up in his chair? I mean, this roster is, this is not going to compete in the West. I'm sorry, LeBron James is one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player of all time. but he is 38 years old. Anthony Davis, once again, is great. Maybe the best defensive player in the league. But these two guys are, I don't think, at this current state of the Western Conference, are not going to win you an NBA championship. The Mavs proved they are a threat. If Luka was healthy, they might have done a little bit more to the Celtics. The Thunder, I mean, that speaks for itself. They got the piece they needed. They got their center. I mean, I think they're very close, if not there, to win an NBA championship. The Timberwolves, they were close there last season. The Denver Nuggets, they're a year off winning an NBA championship. I mean, I can get, sit here all day. The Golden State Warriors have done amazing things in the free agency period so far. I know they lost
Yeah.
Klay, but what they've done replacing him, I think is very smart. And if they get Lauri Markkanen, that's a home run hit. So this current
And
construction of
that
the
in the younger teams too. You talk about the younger teams and where they are in their progression. You talk about the Houston Rockets. I mean, where the Spurs are too. I mean, it's a loaded conference, man. And if you're not making the tough decisions and you're not making aggressive moves, then you might as well just go ahead and say, we're gonna go ahead and tank. We're gonna go and start a rebuild. Because there's no sense in just sitting on your hands after watching what you put out last season and trying to put that same effort back on the court because it's not going to work. It's the definition of insanity. I mean, that's all Rob Pelinka did last season. And then you talk about the number of different lineup changes. They just threw guys they had on the roster, say, all right, I guess you're playing this game. Oh, you want to be in the starting lineup? Go ahead. And just relying on LeBron and AD to just do absolutely everything on the scoring end. It's very sad. And like we said, it's not all on Darvin Ham. I think it goes back to Rob Pelinka and the way he constructs rosters. And honestly, I think if they do poorly this year, he's probably gone because of the way he's done stuff. It doesn't matter how many championships he's won, the consistency is not there. And I'm sure the people of LA are very tired of it, and they want to be at a very high competing level. And the fact that they've kind of wasted the LeBron James final few years, I think will leave a very bitter taste in their mouths.
I mean, I didn't even get to talk about the Phoenix Suns. I know they got, I think they got swept last year in the first round, but KD, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, if they can figure it out, that team's scary. The Pelicans get the DeJounte Murray from the Hawks. They were missing a clutch player last year. DeJounte Murray's a clutch player. I mean, the West is not a cakewalk, neither is the East. And to have LeBron James and AD and to have basically somewhat similar roster to last season and to expect anything different, I think is very idiotic. I don't think there's a free agent left on the market right now that's going to change this roster, this team immensely. It's not going to make this team an overnight contender, a contender overnight. I don't think there's a player left on the market. So I don't expect the Lakers to win the NBA Finals this year. And if they don't, maybe because there's an option on LeBron's contract, player option after this first year going into the second year. So he could just decline it and retire. So I don't know what the Lakers do because Rob Pelinka, like you mentioned, Nathan, has done nothing to make this roster any better since they won the bubble championship. I don't think there's really been a conservative effort to let me go get this star player. Let me, even though if he doesn't want to get the star player, get pieces to put around LeBron and AD. I mean, look at LeBron's success in Miami and in Cleveland. The pieces he had around him, they were much better than what they've been in LA these past couple of years. I know AD's better, the best team AD's probably had outside of Dwayne Wade, but the pieces around those two guys have been pretty poor and don't fit the play style of LeBron. Moving on to another team in California here. The Sacramento Kings are acquiring DeMar DeRozan on a 3-year, $74 million contract that involves the Kings trading Harrison Barnes and an unprotected 2031 pick swap to the San Antonio Spurs and Chris Duarte, 2 second-round picks, and cash to the Chicago Bulls. Nathan, let's start with the Chicago Bulls here before we get into the Kings side of this.
Joke. What a joke.
So they trade DeMar DeRozan and Alex Caruso and get Josh Giddey, Chris Duarte, 2 second-round picks, and cash back. Is this the worst front office in sports? I know we just talked about the Lakers, but is the Chicago Bulls the worst front office?
Currently, I would say probably yes. When I saw this trade pop up, I had to reread extensively through this and to see what the Chicago Bulls got in return for a guy in DeMar DeRozan, who honestly, even with his age, is still a very great player and could make an all-star team. And you don't even get a first round pick for him. You don't get, I mean, Chris Duarte is fine, but he's not gonna change the aspect of your roster. And if the Chicago Bulls are going towards the future, then why aren't you fighting more for better picks? I do not understand it. It has completely ruined their future. It really gets back to the whole Josh Giddey trade and doing a one for one trade and not getting any of the Thunder's picks, which was pretty idiotic. But then you go and you put this effort out there. I don't understand what the whole Chicago Bulls. I don't get their trajectory. It's like they don't have a real pathway to do anything. They're just kind of sitting in limbo. And it's very similar to kind of where I think the Lakers will be in a few seasons, if not next season. It's just pitiful to watch their effort with the trade. There's like no negotiating going on. They're just sitting back and saying, "Yeah, that's fine. We'll go and sign off on that. Go and send them away."
In their defense, though, DeMar DeRozan had told them, "I'm going to the Kings," and I mean, they kind of just got what they got. But looking at the Kings roster, there could have been a lot better options than Chris Duarte. Even though Duarte is a good 3-point shooter, and if it's great alongside Josh Giddey, he spaces the floor. Duarte is 27 years old, and granted, 27 years old is not old in terms of a person, but in terms of NBA players,
Halfway through a lifespan, pretty
I
much.
mean, yeah, pretty much, it's 27 years old. And then you tack 2 second-round picks on that, which may be to turn out to be a Nikola Jokic type talent. Hopefully for the Bulls, they do, but maybe you find a diamond in the rough in one of those second-round picks. But like you said, Nathan, not get a first-round pick for either DeMar DeRozan or Alex Caruso. Who is negotiating these things for the Bulls? Like, once again, is their GM asleep in his office? Like, what is going on? I don't get it. The Bulls. Like you said, Nathan, once again, their trajectory just doesn't make that much sense because you have a 27-year-old Chris Duarte. Kobe White is, and Josh Giddey are kind of young. They're basically your future, but you still have Vucevic on the roster, who is an aging center. Zach LaVine, they're trying to get rid of him every way possible. Where does he go now? Is he stay on the roster? If he does, once again, what are they doing? So the Bulls have done a poor job trying to initiate either a rebuild or a retooling. I don't know what they're doing. Like, I can't look at this team and go, yeah, they're trying to retool. Yeah, they're trying to rebuild. Yeah, they're trying to contend. It's like they're stuck in every direction possible. Like, we're trying to get to the 8 seed. We're trying to make the play in. Oh, no, we're trying to take a Cooper Flagg next year. I don't get what they're doing. And Nathan, let's talk about the Kings here. They go out and get DeMar DeRozan to fill that third star role alongside De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Does that put them over the top in the West, or are they sort of one of those middling teams in the 6, 7, 8 kind of category?
I'm gonna continue with them being one of the middle of the pack teams. I'm sorry, I like DeMar DeRozan and what he brings to the table, but I don't know with the current state of the Kings roster, that really just pushes them over the edge to be one of the more top heavy teams. I look at where they were last year and how much they struggled with their roster. I guarantee they dealt with a lot of injuries, but I mean you have a guy in Malik Monk who honestly could have won Sixth Player of the Year, who competed very well, and then you had De'Aaron Fox, who kind of had a downward year. Domantas Sabonis had a pretty good year. I felt like a guy in Keon Ellis stepped into a very defensive role for the Kings, and there were a lot of good role players that stepped up. But even with all that effort, with how the West was last year, I mean, it didn't really get them where they wanted to be. I mean, and then you add a guy in DeMar DeRozan to this team. And that's just another mouth to feed. Only one person can have the ball at once. And I really am going to question what DeMar's role is going to be on this team. I get he's pretty aged. He's 35 now. How much longer does he have in the NBA? And at what point do you say, was this really the smart move to make rather than trying to go and get better, younger pieces to surround De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis? And I think we'll have that answer after this year. But to me, I just don't think it makes sense where the Kings are as a franchise right now to go and get a guy in DeMar DeRozan who really doesn't push the needle all that much.
I think this is more of a panic acquisition for the Kings because you think about the West, like we mentioned with the Lakers, it's very competitive. I think there's about 8 teams in the West that are championship contenders, and that's a lot, but there's a lot of stacked teams in that conference. And the Kings looked at De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis, and the roster they had last season and said, this is not going to be enough. Not the Lakers did. They said that's enough, but the Kings said this isn't enough. And the only player that they really could get to change the roster immensely that they looked at was DeMar DeRozan. And I don't think he fits this current roster because he is a black hole offensively. He dominates the ball, and he's not a good 3-point shooter whatsoever. He's a great mid-range shooter, But he takes that step back to the 3-point line, and it's a whole different ball game. And you look at Mike Brown's offense for the Kings, he relies a lot on that 3-point shot. He has experience working under Steve Kerr in Golden State. So that doesn't work at all. And then De'Aaron Fox, he's the dominant point guard. He has to have the ball in his hands. He can't have DeMar DeRozan with the ball in his hands 95% of the time. Not saying he would, but you can't have two guys on the court that are just black holes on the offense. And that's what both those guys are, is they are black holes offensively. And De'Aaron Fox himself was not a great 3-point shooter. He shot 36% from three last year, which is his career high. So if you're having two guys on the court at the same time that cannot shoot the three ball well, with Domantas Sabonis at center, it's not a good trio. If Sabonis was maybe a stretch big and was a big 3-point shooting threat, I would say maybe this works out. But when you have your three stars not being prolific 3-point shooters, none of them, how does this work in a league now where it's heavily reliant on the 3-point shot? And I just don't think the Kings, even though you have guys like Malik Monk who are really good 3-point shooters, and Keon Ellis, like you mentioned, Nathan, who was a great 3-and-D player, probably their lockdown defender on the court when he starts. I don't get how that's going to push you over the line against teams like the Mavericks, the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves. I don't get how this roster, the way it's currently constructed, does that. And like I said, it just feels like a panic acquisition. And I don't see this working out in the long run. And I would not be surprised if we're sitting here next season and DeMar DeRozan has been traded or something like that, because it just doesn't make sense. I can't say it enough. It just doesn't make sense for me.
Yeah, I think another big thing too, the floor spacing is going to suffer a lot more with the mid-range game trying to be worked on. I mean, that's DeMar's go-to. The way that De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis utilize the pick and roll, and they try to utilize the paint a lot more. I mean, it's the floor spacing is going to suffer, number one. But then you talk about the 3-point aspect of it and where Mike Brown's offense is. If you have 4 3-point shooters trying to take threes, I mean, there's going to be a high volume. You might make a lot, but you're not going to be shooting it well. You're going to be struggling on the offensive end more times than not. And then let's say Mike Brown changes his offense to rely more on just take the open shot. It's not going to work. There won't be enough scoring efficiency. The points per possession will suffer so much more, and that's just another big reason why I think bringing guy in. DeMar DeRozan and just does not make a whole lot of sense for the Kings, especially where they were given 2 years ago when they were one of the top seeds in the West. I mean, that team looked like they were ready to be a contender, and they take a step back last year, and now you're here, and you're really wondering where is the future? Where how are we going to get to a certain point? What is their goal? I'm sure they want to win an NBA championship. Does DeMar the addition of DeMar DeRozan really benefit the Kings that much to where they can say, "Hey, we are a championship caliber team. We can contend for an NBA championship." And at the end of the day, you just say no because of the fact that you have so many problems on the offensive end. And we haven't even talked about the defensive end. I mean, I think even with De'Aaron Fox being a leader in steals, I think there were multiple possessions that he just completely was taken out of the game on the defensive end. And Domantas Sabonis, I think, is a good defender. I think he needs to be a better rim protector at some points. And DeMar DeRozan, with his age, I think he's fallen behind a little bit defensively. So I think only having a guy in Keon Ellis and then Malik Monk who offers a good bit defensively, they can't do it all. I mean, there has to be effort on both ends of the court. I think that's another area that will suffer with this addition. I think the pace at which the Kings play at will suffer. I mean, De'Aaron Fox loves to run, but if you don't have a roster to match that, then you can't play at that level. So I just, at the end of the day, I don't see how this really benefits the Kings at all.
Yeah, you talk about the pace they like to play at. DeMar DeRozan likes to get into that mid-range and back you down and do post fades and stuff. He's going to slow down the offense drastically. And we didn't even get to sit here and talk about how this is going to impact Keegan Murray's development, because DeMar DeRozan is going to take shots away from Keegan Murray, who I think could be a good third or fourth option on a championship team. I mean, Michael Porter Jr. was a third option on the Denver Nuggets when they won the championship. And I think Keegan Murray is probably better than Michael Porter Jr. or could be. He's a much better 3-point shooter. So I think this hurts his development a lot. And once again, it felt like a rushed move by the Kings to sort of push this rebuild along they've been doing for the longest time. And I don't think it works out. But the team that made out like a fat rat here was the San Antonio Spurs, getting Harrison Barnes and a 2031 pick swap. for basically nothing. Like, how do they make out better than the Bulls? I think Harrison Barnes is going to be the perfect fit alongside a guy like Victor Wembanyama. Harrison Barnes is a great 3-point shooter, has been his entire career. He shot almost 40% from three last year. And Wembanyama is probably going to be the main offensive initiator. So to have Barnes spotting him in the corner and being a 3-and-D type player is what the Lakers need for LeBron. So to get that person basically for free from the Kings, steal for the Spurs. And I think it doesn't push them over the top and make them better than they like. It doesn't make them the sixth seed in the West or something like that automatically. But I think it puts them in a better position than they were before they did the trade, obviously. Talking about moving on to the Eastern Conference here, the Orlando Magic signed Franz Wagner to a 5-year, $224 million maximum rookie contract extension that could be worth up to $269 million, which would be about 30% of the team's cap space. And they also signed Jonathan Isaac to a 5-year, $84 million contract extension. So anything kind of like the Raptors did when we talked about the contracts last week, the Magic really invest in their youth here. Do you agree with them paying Franz Wagner this much money?
No, not really. Look, I get trying to lock down your core and your young core, and you like what you have in Franz Wagner, and you're worried about him leaving in free agency. I don't think you need to give him that much money. I mean, what, 30% of the team's cap space? That's a ridiculous amount for someone who really is like that borderline star. I don't think he provides enough on. I mean, he definitely has the potential, but I don't think he provides enough as of yet to have a maximum rookie contract extension. I mean, that's just a ton of money. And then you break down Jonathan Isaac's contract. I agree with that one a little bit more. Even with Jonathan Isaac not playing as much, he has just been so beneficial on the defensive end for the Magic. And I think whenever he stays healthy, I think he will make a huge impact on that team, because in the few minutes he played last season, I was just very impressed with what he was able to do. I agree with that contract, but with Franz Wagner, I need to see a little bit more. And he might go and prove me wrong this coming season and just step into his own and just completely blow me out of the water with his performances. But after watching last season, I think there's a lot of things he needs to work on. And I mean, winning a maximum rookie contract extension is just incredible for a guy in Franz Wagner, who I don't think is on the same caliber as, I mean, what, Scottie Barnes, who got a fat contract too. I mean, they're not comparable in my eyes.
I mean, I don't think Wagner's even made an all-star team. So to give him this much money and have Paolo Banchero on the horizon, having to give him a max contract, I mean, you're investing a lot in Franz Wagner here and sort of hampering your ability to construct a roster around a guy like Paolo Banchero, who's just your future. I don't agree with giving Wagner this much money, but when you invest a high pick in a guy and he plays somewhat well for your team and you see him as your future, I can't disagree with the Magic going all in on their future and signing Wagner and then eventually signing Banchero to massive contract extensions. Like you said, Nathan, maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. I hope it does for Magic fans. They've been having to deal with a lot of things since Dwight Howard left. So I don't agree with giving him this much money, but looking at it from a general manager perspective, it makes sense. You got to lock up your youth. You got to lock up your future. And they did that here. And then Jonathan Isaac, it's a huge get. Very good defensively. They're stalwart on the defensive side of the basketball. And nowadays, it's very hard to find a guy that plays as good on the defensive end as Jonathan Isaac does. So you got to lock him up when you can. And to have him for, I think it's a very team-friendly contract, is big, because if he gets healthier than what he was last season, he might turn into a good offensive player and be a good role player alongside Wagner and Banchero. So I think this is a very good friendly contract to get him locked up in for the future. And once again, Magic lock up their guys for the future, and maybe they can do something here in the next few years, because they made the playoffs last season and gave the Cavs the run for their money. It just came down to they were not there yet. And I think the moves they've made this offseason, getting KCP, signing him to a free agent contract, and some other pieces they made, getting De Silva in the NBA draft, I think might push them over the top and might get them past that first round. And I don't think they get much farther than that, but this team is looking up, and I don't want them to rush into something like the Kingston. I really hope they don't. The Cleveland Cavaliers, who actually beat the Orlando Magic, like I mentioned, in the playoffs, signed Donovan Mitchell to a 3-year, $105 million contract extension. Nathan, we've been sitting on here for the past feels like month debating on what the Cavs are going to do. Are they going to trade Mitchell? Are they going to keep Garland, trade him? What are they going to do with Jared Allen? What's the whole construction of this roster going to look like going forward? And the Cavs re-signed Donovan Mitchell. Does this mean Darius Garland's out the door? Maybe Jared Allen too, or are they going to stay home and play under Kenny Atkinson?
I really think that the Cavs will try to keep their current roster construction together for the most part. I think they want to give it a run with a pretty much healthy team. I don't think they can truly say that yet. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. I don't think this roster is put together well enough to really compete in the East. And that's sad to say, speaking that the East has been rather weak the past few years. I think where. I mean, giving Donovan Mitchell this contract, you're basically just saying, hey, Darius Garland, it's either you play well or you're gonna get traded somewhere. You're gonna have to leave. And I think that just it goes back to the whole situation with not really letting your young stars develop well. I think the Cavs have kind of rushed into a situation where they say either we had to let a guy in Donovan Mitchell walk, which they obviously don't want to do, or we're gonna have to trade him for something, which I think they could have gotten some good aspects, but it makes them look bad when they go back to the whole Jazz trade that they made, or they keep Donovan Mitchell for a fairly sizable contract, and you just depend on his future. And I'm sorry, I don't think that the current roster construction in the Cavs really makes much of a difference. I think Evan Mobley's a very nice piece. I think he's really stepped to his own. Jared Allen provides a lot of help in the front court, and then Donovan Mitchell does a lot of scoring. He basically does all of the Cavs scoring. Then you look at the rest of the roster. I think Darius Garland has a lot of times where he struggles, especially on the defensive end. Very comparable to the way Trae Young plays. But I don't think he offers near as much on the offensive end. He struggles more times than not from behind the arc. His 3-point shooting has dipped the past few years. And then you look at a guy in Isaac Okoro who has pretty much taken a small forward spot on the Cavs. He offers much of nothing besides the defense. He has really become just a black hole in the offense, like you like to say, Alex. And honestly, I think the move should have been. If we're going to invest in our young pieces, if we're going to say, hey, Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, we like you, we want to develop you, then we're going to go ahead and let Donovan Mitchell go. We're going to go ahead and trade him or try to get something in return and try to build around those two young guys and really invest in them rather than saying, hey, we're really unsure about our future. We are unsure about our plan. We're going to go ahead and re-sign Donovan Mitchell. We're going to go ahead and spend all this money to go ahead and secure him for the next 3 years. And then we're just going to let him take over the team and y'all two can take the back seat. We're not going to focus on your development as much. And we're going to have an incomplete roster where we won't really compete well. And I'm talking about making it to the playoffs and maybe winning a first round matchup and then getting bounced in the second. I don't think that team can go super far. And that's sad to say because if you talked about the Cavs a few years ago, I think they had a lot of potential. But it goes back to them not making the right moves. I don't think they have paired. I mean, you talk about the Max Strus pickup after last year. I don't think that did them any favors. He had a few big shots, but other than that, I felt like he was not near the comparable level to he was the year before on the Heat. I think there were a lot of better pieces that were available in the league, and they decided to just kind of sit in their hands rather than make an aggressive move to pair Donovan Mitchell with a good 3-and-D player, and not have. Just play a 4-on-5 because Isaac Okoro just kind of stands there in the corner most times on offense and he can't hit an open three to save his life. It's a terrible situation. And I compare this back to the whole Colin Sexton era. They decided to draft Darius Garland. They kind of completely forgot about Colin Sexton, who really was putting up great numbers, even if it was a bad Cavs team at the time. And Colin Sexton really didn't get a chance to develop. And now you look at what he's been able to do for the Jazz. I think on that roster, especially surrounded by a bunch of young guys, he's been able to develop a lot more. I think Darius Garland could be an even better player now if they would pay more attention to him. But instead, they want to fool around with a guy who's basically a veteran at this point, and I don't know how many more years he has before he's out of the league. And that's really going to squander their future going forward.
I think what it comes down to is you cannot run this two small guard lineup in the NBA. I mean, you look at Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. The Trailblazers kind of tried to run that for the longest time, and they won playoff series. They made the playoffs, but they didn't win an NBA championship. And the Cavs tried to do that with Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. Didn't work out. Colin Sexton got traded alongside Lauri Markkanen and some other stuff for Donovan Mitchell. And they try to do this thing with Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is an above average defender in the NBA. He proved it last season, ranking third in steals per game and sixth in deflections league wide. So he is an above average defender, but he's not going to come out and do everything for you offensively and then be expected to do everything for your team on the perimeter defensively when Darius Garland has his games where he goes 2-for-15 from the field and then is a liability defensively. So this team, it's construction I don't agree with. I think Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland, one of those guys, needs to be moved. And whether they make that decision now or in 2 years from now, it doesn't matter because this team is, like you said, Nathan, not going to make the NBA Finals, not going to win an NBA championship the way it's constructed. Evan Mobley has made great strides. He proved a lot last season playing the Celtics in that second round matchup. Jared Allen and Evan Mobley cannot play together. You can't have Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, and Isaac Okoro on the court at the same time. There's just absolutely no way. Isaac Okoro and Jared Allen are both black holes offensively. Jared Allen is limited to about lobs and maybe a hook shot. Evan Mobley, he can strip paces up the floor a little bit, but he's not some prolific 3-point shooter, not a guaranteed stretch big. He's growing into that, but he's not there yet. And Isaac Okoro is a black hole. So this roster construction, they have not done any favors to Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, or Evan Mobley, who I think are their core three guys. And this contract extension, while it makes sense because Donovan Mitchell is basically their entire offense, he proved it last season, like I mentioned. The Cavs just need to make a decision here on what they're doing. And I don't think signing Donovan Mitchell makes it any clearer for me. I don't think it says to me, yes, we're going to win an NBA championship. We're making the right moves here. Some other moves this offseason, Nathan. The Charlotte Hornets re-signed Miles Bridges to a 3-year, $75 million contract. The Golden State Warriors acquired Kyle Anderson and Buddy Hield via sign and trades with the Timberwolves and 76ers, respectively. The 76ers signed free agent Caleb Martin to a 4-year, $32 million contract. The Los Angeles Clippers signed free agent Mo Bamba to a 1-year contract. The Indiana Pacers signed former number two overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft and free agent James Wiseman to a 2-year contract. Minnesota Timberwolves signed free agents Joe Ingles and PJ Dozier to 1-year contracts. The Denver Nuggets signed free agent Dario Saric to a 2-year, $10.6 million contract. The Kings signed free agent Jordan McLaughlin to a 1-year contract. Pelicans signed free agent Daniel Theis to a 1-year contract. Heat signed Alec Burks to a 1-year contract. They also re-signed Haywood Highsmith to a 2-year, $11 million contract. The Pistons re-signed Simone, I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, to a 2-year, $16 million contract. Celtics re-signed Xavier Tillman to a 2-year contract, and then the Phoenix Suns re-signed Damian Lee to a 1-year contract. That's what we have at this point with free agency, Nathan. Looking at all those things as a whole, who do you think made the best moves at this stage of the free agency?
I'm probably gonna have to go with if we're talking about like free agency and trading as a whole, I mean, you gotta look at what the Spurs have done. I mean, that is insane. Getting a very veteran point guard in Chris Paul who can really facilitate well. You talked about the whole facilitating problems last year. Those are pretty much gone away. I think the addition of Harrison Barnes to the roster really helps with their outside shooting. Which I think was a little bit more of a struggle for them last year. And then there are some other pickups in there that I really just liked. And their draft, even though I think they should have stuck with Rob Dillingham, I think their draft was pretty sublime. And I think this roster is really going to compete well in the West. I don't expect them to go and make the playoffs or anything, but I do think they'll make a bigger jump than where they were last year. And that's all saying how much longer Chris Paul has in the NBA, because I don't know if he's a permanent fix to the whole facilitating problem. Because unfortunately, Jeremy Sochan, he cannot run the point guard position to save his life. And I think they realized that last year. But I don't think Chris Paul is a permanent solution. But I think they're probably going to end up working on that here soon. But to see Chris Paul and Wemby on the same team, I mean, it takes you back to Lob City days with the Clippers, honestly.
Yeah, I think Chris Paul is definitely going to be very useful for a guy like Stephon Castle, who is the rookie they drafted. So to have him sort of mentor Castle, who is not known to be a great facilitator, he's a great athlete. He is developing his 3-point shot. I just think getting Chris Paul is really key for his development and is a great move by Greg Popovich. One of the general managers. I think he is kind of like the general manager for the Spurs, who isn't asleep right now at the wheel, which is kind of surprising because Greg Popovich is up there in age, but he is still making moves for this team, making sure they're set up for the future.
He's young at heart.
Yes, he is. He's very young at heart. I think another team that's made some pretty good moves this offseason is the Golden State Warriors. I know they released Chris Paul for nothing, and they basically got nothing for Klay Thompson, but they get Kyle Anderson from the Timberwolves, who is a great 3-and-D player, will fit perfectly alongside Steph Curry. I know Anderson's.
I think it's more of a D and three type player, Alex.
Yeah, his jump shot is not the greatest thing in the world, but he does make it. And he's a good piece for them to
Somehow.
have. And then getting Buddy Hield, who has made more 3-pointers than Steph Curry, I believe, in like the past 5 years. So for him to come in and fill the shoes of Klay Thompson, who he's been playing better than the past couple of years, statistically wise from the 3-point line, I think is big for this team as they look to move into this post-Splash Bro era and move towards sort of just building around Steph Curry for his final few years and trying to figure it out. I think these guys are two big pickups for a team that is looking to compete in the West. I don't think they're going to make the NBA finals or maybe not even win the first round, but I think they're putting themselves in a much better position than they were previously. I think going into the offseason, I think if they would have stayed with Klay and would have re-signed him to some big contract he was wanting, I think it would have been pretty idiotic of him as much as he means to that franchise. He did not play well last season at all. They moved him to the bench multiple times. It was time for him to go. And to get these guys to replace what Klay did, I think is huge for this team going forward. And I think Steve Kerr and Mike Dunleavy, as much as they've made mistakes free agency-wise in the draft, I think these two acquisitions here have made a lot of sense and will do great things for this team going forward. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.